What's up, guys? Welcome back to the S3 Magazine podcast. That's Jonathan Woolley. I'm Mike Sanders. Today we've got kind of just a hodgepodge of topics that we're going to go across. The first one is me and Woolley had an epiphany yesterday, actually. We kind of figured out why we hate EVs. And it's because we hate Audis. Hear me out. Hear me out, okay? Audis suck. No, they're actually great cars. Well, kind of. They're great ideas, and I think that's the same reason that we hate EVs, because it's a great idea but kind of failed on a massive scale when it comes to what a true, what I'm going to call myself being a car guy, wants in a vehicle. But whenever it comes to reliability and holding value and just being able to actually make it through a true lifespan of it, an entire vehicle, they fail absolutely miserably. And I feel like that's the same thing that we're kind of seeing with these EVs. Woolley, weigh in. Why do you hate Audis and EVs?
Well, I'm kind of... All right, so I have a Genesis GV70. I think they call it electrified. And if I hear anybody say that word again, I swear I'm going to club a baby seal. I hate the word electrified. They're just trying to take something that the general population doesn't like and give it a cool name. And that in itself is so damn weak. If it was cool, you don't have to give it a cool name. But what we're doing now is like, oh, they don't like it. Well, just make it sound better. You know, like just, anyway, I think they call it electrified. It's the EV version of the GV70. And I gotta say though, like, I don't hate it. I don't hate the car. It's a learning curve, and I'm only on like day three, and there are certainly things that I don't love about it, but overall, I mean, it's not bad. I'm learning that I think that you and me maybe have to try and separate EVs. We read a lot, we've learned a lot. And it's very easy to hate everything about them. The thing is, like, it's not necessarily the idea of an electric vehicle that I don't like. It's turned into the fact that we're being forced into them. Mm-hmm. I hate that. I do not like the idea of government or anybody telling me what to do, because I'm an adult and I don't want to be told what to do. And you know, we live in this free country, so it should be free and we shouldn't be told what we got to do. So I don't like that. And I also especially don't like the fact that people, they're selling this to us under the guise that it's good for the environment, which is not true. So those two things, the fact that it's being forced on us and it's being forced on us under this umbrella of climate change is frustrating. But, you know, the Genesis itself, man, like, I don't hate it. It's, aside from it being an EV, it's got good steering feel. It's numb, like any new car would be, but, like, it's good. I remember it's been a while since I've driven the Mach-E, but it feels a little bit more physical than the Mach-E did to me. It's got this boost button on the steering wheel, which is kind of fun. It's you know, obviously a gimmick, but basically what it does is when you hit the boost button, it gives it all of the juice for 10 seconds. So when you're driving the Genesis EV around normally, it's not super like abrupt, you know what I mean? Like this, the throttle response is fairly passive or whatever. But when you hit that button, the seat bolsters tighten in, all the gauges go from blue to orange, and you get 10 seconds of like sharp throttle response. I mean, you just breathe on it and it goes. So, you know, while it is kind of a gimmick, it's fun. I will give it that, you know, and it's kind of a fun little trick to play around with on the road.
That sounds like Ear has watched Fast and the Furious way too many times. A little button that all of a sudden just changes everything, gives you all the power, makes everything kind of dim and and tighten it at the same time, and it lasts exactly 10 seconds. That's kind of fun.
That is the best way to describe it. Is it's like that first Fast and Furious, because you'll be cruising and you can like put the pedal down and then hit the button, and it takes about a second to like to do all of its stuff. But you do, you go, whoa! I mean, dude, it's like Monica, you know, I mean, it's funny. Like, I took one of my daughter's friend's moms in the car, and she flat out was throwing cuss words around, man. Like, it's surprising. So I don't know, man. I think that us as car enthusiasts maybe do need to start separating what we don't like about EVs. We say that they're not soulful, but they could be, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, I know we've talked about this, but we got to keep talking about it until, you know, until the voices get heard. There is a wide open lane that I see for somebody to make an EV. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to describe this. And we can go into what we had talked about this earlier and running numbers and how much it costs you to run your Tundra. But like, there is a wide open lane if somebody would just do it to make a commuter car that is fun. Fun in a way that's whimsical, like the 80s. It doesn't have to have all the freaking power and do 0-60 in 2 seconds and all that. Like, just make it engaging. If it's fast, great, but like, focus on the engagement. Come from like that 80s style of driver sports car engagement. Look, make it a commuter car. It doesn't have to have all the range. Try and keep the thing light. Try and keep the interior analog. I know the battery is not going to be analog and all that, but like, keep the inside kind of simplistic. Put one engine in it. Put it in the middle, you know, put it in the back or something. One thing that I'm noticing from this Genesis that I already knew, but most people probably don't think about it, your AC is not running off of an alternator. It's not self-powering. Like, your AC in an EV is draining your battery. So that gives you a really good chance to bring back some of the cool T-tops and Targas. And see, in the 80s, air conditioning wasn't that good. Like, yes, designers in the 80s knew how to connect the person to the car and all of that a lot better than they do now. But like, AC wasn't good. Targas actually had a purpose. Try and get some airflow. You know what I mean? Like, but now everybody rides around with the windows up, and that's especially true in an EV. But let's get back to actually being efficient. You know what I mean? Like, if you can turn the air off and open the top up, whether it's a Targa or T-tops or a little convertible, you're just being more efficient. And that's what all the luxury brands have lost immediately, is efficiency. They're talking about green, but this stuff isn't efficient. Make it affordable, make it light. If we're gonna think about EVs, we have to think small. I know Americans don't wanna accept that, but the idea of a fun electric commuter car that somebody like you could run around to work or to run errands in during the week, and nobody's saying to get rid of your Tundra. You know, that's the other thing here. In the last 2 years, when this has been legislated, it's made it so divisive that it's like either or. Do you like EVs or do you hate them? And it's like, no, there's no reason why we couldn't have something like that, some fun sporty EV in the garage next to the F-150 or the Tundra or the Tahoe, or I'm just trying to, you know, the big family car. Use that on the weekends. Use that for ball practice. But when you're just running to and from work or running an errand, take the EV. And if they can price it right, it'll pay for itself.
Absolutely. We all need to admit to ourselves, especially the people who are EV pro EV, EV enthusiasts, need to understand that electric vehicles do have flaws. They do have choke points. There are certain things that they are just flat out not good at, like towing, for example. Towing is a great example. It ain't there yet, man. You can't tow boats with it. You can't tow cars with it. You can't do anything that, you know, needs a bunch of continuous torque all the time. They just can't do it yet. I'm sure the tech will get there eventually, but as of right now, it's not really an option for that. Now, that being said, make a freaking EV that makes sense. You know, what you were talking about was essentially like, make me an MR2 EV kind of thing, you know, something that's sporty, fun, lightweight, looks good, can hit turns really, really well. Maybe it's not the fastest thing in the world, but you can at least do some spirited driving with. Like, I feel like that should be pretty easy to do now that they figured out how to make EVs fast and torquey and have a good power band and everything. I feel like that would be a slam dunk of just an easy thing to do, but for some reason, no one's making it. They keep wanting to make the next 1,000 horsepower, 9,000 pound Hummer. And it's just like, why, man? Who actually wants that thing? And by the way, you manufacturers, you guys can't even consistently build the damn things, and they've got problems like crazy. And it takes so much resources to make that gargantuan pig. Like, that's not green at all. That's not what an EV is supposed to be. Make it make sense. And people like me and you will probably actually drive it, really like it, and then go from being people who hate EVs to big time proponents of it. And then you'll have us in your court, you know, and that could be massive for you. But God dang, man, you got to make something that makes sense. And right now,
that's what the Genesis is teaching me, is like, I can drive that Genesis and I can be like, I understand why people like this. Now, here's the thing. I need them to understand why I like the cars that I like. And we're not going to get there if we all just keep saying the other one's a bunch of idiots. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and if you think that EVs are green and we're not going to change your mind on that, and you think internal combustion is absolutely killing the entire planet, that's fine. You know what? But like, you guys got to stop thinking 100%. If you can get 50% of people to be open to the idea of an EV as a spare car, you know, as your commuter car, that's still a victory. That should be a victory in your opinion. That's the problem. The EV people are going, we need 100%. We need everybody to do this for everything all the time, or else, you know, or else, or whatever. We're going to mandate it. And it's like, no. Man, you need to start kind of exposing people, winning people over. You also need to be on our side about affordable EVs, because you're not going to get everybody in one when they're $60,000 plus. You're not going to get everybody in one if they're all boring. You have to understand that some of us want to drive while we drive. So if you want everybody to own an EV, you better start making an EV that everybody wants, you know, all different sorts of people. You need to realize, like you were saying, some people have to tow. Some people have damn work to do. Some people have to carry tools, you know, like, we're not going to get to 100% overnight. We need to start realizing, let's pursue it. I mean, as a car enthusiast, I've never said let's not pursue it. It's interesting. It's cool. You know what I mean? It's not cool the way it's being implemented, but there is an opportunity for it to be cool.
Yeah, that's one reason why I was so pumped up about the idea of Hyundai making that Envision 74, because I was like, holy crap, they're finally going to give us one that I can truly be excited about. But then, of course, you know, squash the hopes and dreams there.
Did you see this week they said, we're serious about it? We're like, what does that mean? And they're like, nah, we're just serious about it. But they're not saying they're going to make it. But they're not saying they're not going to make it.
That's been
a big old debacle, man. Like that.
Dude, I mean, I know that a lot of times corporations only want to listen to their stockholders. Hyundai, you should maybe listen to the people here, because a lot of people, I think, would buy that car. Well, I mean, if you looked at anything online, that, you know, the stuff people said about the concept and everything was pretty positive. So make it.
I mean, Hyundai, Kia, Genesis, you guys are in a position to really take off with this EV stuff. You've got great designs. I can tell you from the Genesis, it's an engaging car. I love all the 3.3 turbo stuff that Genesis is doing. They're more engaging than other sports sedans. Sorry, they just are. I found it to be more engaging than the IS500 with the V8. They've just got it down. It feels right. It accelerates right. It's the cockpit is driver focused. They have safety things in these cars. Like when you hit the turn signal, the inside of the gauge, left or right gauge, whatever way you're going, lights or illuminates with the rear view mirror, you know, like a side view camera or something. But it's not safety tech that's making people dumber. And it's safety tech that's bringing your focus to the focal point, which is, you know, what's in front of you, the gauges and everything like that. And I'm telling you, man, their seat design, the lighting effects in this Genesis, it's all good. I love that Ioniq 5. It looks kind of like Volkswagen would have made it. It looks like a GTI, you know, and that EV6 thing is super weird and futury. And like, they have an opportunity to run away with this. Make that little freaking concept. What is it? The Envision 74 or whatever. Like, make it. Make it. Do it. Just don't do it the way we all know it's going to be, where it's like proportionately giant and it's going to be big power and it's going to be the cost of a Cayman GT4. And you got to bring it down to a price that people who are on the fence go, you know what? Perfect example. We're talking about this. You said, you know, between gas and an oil change we can't count insurance. Between gas and an oil change, you probably spend, what, $400 a month to drive your Tundra back and forth to work.
Yeah, it's totally paid for. That's just gas and you know, roughly monthly oil change is roughly $400 to $450 a month, every month.
That does not include a car payment.
Yep.
However, if they could bring an EV in, I don't know, you did the math earlier and I can't remember it, but we basically, like, if they can bring an EV in at that $30,000 kind of price point, you can get a 6-year loan on that thing and it essentially pays for itself. And you've got something that you can rip around in and have a good time in and not be using gas. And I mean, you may as well, I would rather pay for a fun car than pay for gas in the Tundra. And you don't have to sell the Tundra to get it, is the thing. And we always talk about EVs being obsolete in 10 years or being worthless because the battery has aged and the cost of a new battery kind of totals these things out. It doesn't really matter. At that point, you can look at it like, hey, even if it's only worth a few grand, I didn't spend that money on the Tundra. The money is going to be spent. So do I spend it on another vehicle to have in my stable, or do I just put gas in the Tundra?
Not only that, but you're spending it on like right now, I love my Tundra, but I'm spending all that money on just consumables, just gas and oil the whole time. So yeah, man, if there were a fun EV out there that were close to that price point on a monthly basis, like that would make sense. That would make sense. Make it make sense and I'll buy one, guys.
That's the thing, manufacturers. You have to make this make sense. It's not making sense the way they're rolling it out. Cadillac says they're going to round out their 3-EV lineup with an EV Escalade. That's going to be another 9,000-pound, $130,000 EV luxury cruiser. Do you know how much the batteries weigh in the Hummer EV? 2,800 pounds. That's how much the car needs to weigh. That's how much this little EV MR2 we're talking about needs to weigh. They need to bring it in around 3,000. The battery weighs 2,800 pounds in these things.
Wasn't it GM that for the past like year and a half has been claiming that they're going to make EVs for everyone? They're going to make affordable EVs?
GM does not do what they say.
Yeah, Mary Barra, what the hell are you doing? You haven't made anything that's made sense yet.
Yeah, I guess they're trying to lead with the affluent crowd, make it sexy, and then.
Means sure.
I think America and Europe is trying to make EVs sexy. They're trying to sell this EV sizzle. But what EVs really need to be is small.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, you can do that for the five percenters or whatever, but don't call it green, you know, because guys, if you somehow stumbled on this and you are pro EV and you don't know a whole lot about cars, I'll just tell you that a 2,800 pound battery ain't nothing green about it. You know what you could power, how many smaller cars you could power, how many hybrids you could power. You know, it's just, it's that they have completely lost the focus of what the mission was. But why are we transitioning everything if we're going to do it in excess like we always do? Doesn't make sense.
It's the old big fat American concept, I guess, is what we're just kind of sticking to here.
I mean, here's the dilemma. I'm sure all these manufacturers are in boardrooms and they go, we got to make EVs because the government's saying that we have to make EVs. And they're like, well, our customers don't want it. They want big 7-passenger luxury, you know, crossovers and SUVs. Duh, that's what's selling. And they go, well, we got to make this sexy. We got to make them want it. So you know what? Build a $100,000 car, put some celebrities in it, some athletes or whatever, and then everybody else will follow. But like, you're losing focus of what the whole intention is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that.
Yeah. I mean, financially speaking, it makes sense because by pricing it super crazy like this, and then also luckily for them being in a recession, not that many people are going to be buying vehicles. Only the rich, wealthy, affluent people are. And so why not just give those guys what they want and price gouge them in the process, make a bunch of profit margin off of each vehicle and continue to learn and figure out. Because let's face it, man, when it comes to EVs, these engineers and everybody who are building these cars, they still don't know what they don't know. And there is a lot that they don't know. So they got to start figuring this stuff out. So everything's getting over-engineered and make it bigger and better and faster. And let's see what kind of roadblocks we run into. That's great, but like, it ain't green. Let's be honest about that. Yeah. Like, stop lying to the people. That's not green, man. When you have a 2,800 pound battery that is full of rare materials that have to be mined out of the earth, that ain't green, my friend. It's just not.
Yeah, we've got to stop. Like, we've got to stop with this excess bullshit. Like, my daughter's toothbrush has an app. Like, you know what I mean? Like we need to back off of this a little bit. Like, and that's why I'm saying there's a wide open lane for some manufacturer to totally re-envision what an EV could be and to market it like you were just saying, to come out and go, guys, we've gone too far. None of this, and you can point to Hummer EVs and Escalades and F-150, none of this is good for the earth. None of this, you know, is green. Like, let's put the driver into EVs. We've made this car. We've made the Miata of EVs, you know what I mean? And we brought it in at an affordable price point. And you can own this car for what you would spend in gas per month on your luxury truck. We're not telling you. You don't have to sell your luxury truck. That's the beauty here. You don't even need to come with a down payment. Like, we can finance you, and it will not cost you more than you are already spending on gas and oil changes in your truck.
And the funny thing is, like, you would think, like, from an engineering perspective, you would think that that would be a slam dunk, because then it would be affordable. It would be lightweight and truly green. And on top of that, it would probably be a performance monster. Because EVs are torquey as hell. They put the power to the wheel immediately. You know, like, if you made the EV MR2 or the EV Miata, like, think about how great of a marketing gimmick that would be. You could be like, yeah, super efficient battery, only makes 400 horsepower, but still runs a 10-second quarter mile. Like, that would be great, man.
I'd probably
go for that.
That's that power obsession, though, and it doesn't need to run a 10-second quarter mile. It could run a 13-second and still be a hell of a lot of fun. And that's what the marketing needs to say. You don't need to run this. You don't. This does not have 600 foot-pounds of torque, because you know what? That's just too much. It's not fun. Like, this is designed to be fun. This is designed to almost be retro. It is what the 80s were about, but with a future EV spin on it, right? Like it's kind of what the Cybertruck and that Envision were touching on, but, you know, not quite there. And that's the thing. Then they end their marketing by saying, and we're not asking you to choose. We are not saying give up your internal combustion, your Tahoe, your truck. We're saying, why not both? Step in, try it. We've made one for you, the driver, you know, the guy that's passionate, the person that's passionate, you know, that just doesn't want another cloud to ride on, because that's what EVs are. They're little freaking clouds, you know, like they're just pods. They're dumb. Somebody has got to break that mold. And nobody's done it. I mean, hopefully somebody will. Anyway. There was also, kind of changing gears, but kind of in the same topic. I did an article on, there's some data coming out now because EVs have kind of been out for 10 years. The Leaf, like 12 years. And so they started looking at, you know, we're always worried about, as car enthusiasts, we kind of assume a lot of times that whatever car we're buying, we're going to own long term because we want to get it, put modifications on it, make it better, fall in love with it. You know what I mean? Keep it. And that's another big hurdle for EVs is you just can't think about long-term ownership with an EV. They are disposable. You think of them like a cell phone. And that's why techie people love them. And that's why analog type of car enthusiast people hate them. But anyway, I'm going to have to look this up because I don't remember the numbers. But they were collecting data on the amount of battery failures. The good news is batteries don't fail much. The other thing is they hadn't been out that long, right? So they looked specifically, the cars with the, there was like the Chevy Bolt and I think the Kona Electric had recalls. So those had higher numbers, throw those out because of the recall. They've taken care of it. But the cars with the biggest failures have been the Nissan Leaf and the Tesla Model S. That shouldn't surprise you. They've been out the longest. The Leaf came out in 2011. The Tesla Model S, I think, 2012? When did that thing come out? 13? Let me see. Hold on. I've got it right here. 13. So the Leaf, for example, try and keep these numbers straight in your head. The battery replacements needed on a 2011 Leaf was 8.3%, or is 8.3% as of now. Now, a 2012 Leaf is 3.5%. So what we're seeing is in this year 12, it goes, you know what I mean? It went from 3 to 8. Now, that could be that the first year of the Leaf sucked, had bugs, learning curves, learning tech, all of that. But it also could be that we're starting to see the shelf life of these battery packs. And if that's true, you can expect over the next couple of years that that's just going to exponentially, that curve is just going to go up, go up, go up, because these batteries are just going to start hitting the shelf life. To reinforce that, if we look at the Tesla Model S, the battery replacements needed on a 2013 are at 8.5%. So it's right there with the Leaf. It's just 2 years newer, actually. The 2014 Tesla Model S is 7.3%, and the 2015 is 3.5%. So we're seeing a trend in the data where it sits at 3% until it hits, let's just say, 9 to 11 years, and then boom, in a year, it's going to 7 or 8%. Now, what I'm curious about is what it's going to be next year. Is it going to be 16%? Is it going to be 25%? Or is it going to hold it? Hey, you know what I mean? I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot of things at play here. You know, you can manipulate statistics to say whatever you want. Battery tech has obviously changed in that 10-year period. But at the same time, like you said, you got to look at this like cell phones. Have you ever had a cell phone where the battery didn't start glitching and taking a shit on you after you'd had it for 2 years, you know? And that's because it absolutely has a shelf life. That thing's only going to be efficient for a certain amount of time. I mean, you can be the most you can have the most well-kept iPhone ever, but after a couple of updates and using it every single day and charging every night and all that kind of stuff, like, you look at the battery life on that thing and you're like, holy shit, we're down to 74%. It's only 2 years old. That stuff just happens. That's just kind of the nature of the beast when it comes to batteries. And that is, it's funny that we went full circle here, because this is how I actually started the podcast, in saying that we hate EVs because they're too much like Audis. This is kind of the same thing. So because of that concept, because of what we might be looking at now, we're looking at this data and we're saying, okay, well, the shelf life on these things is probably going to be somewhere in the range of 9 to 15 years. And at that point, they're basically just going to be boat anchors. They're going to be formerly expensive, now very cheap boat anchors. So if you own one and you want to get rid of it, it's going to be like, send it to the dealership and just trade it in, or else sell it to someone for super, super cheap who is going to do a battery swap themselves, or else bite the bullet, do the $15,000 battery swap, and then sell it and go get something else, which sounds like the exact same thing that high-end Euro car guys do every 6 to 7 years right now.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I start thinking about, is what is this going to look like? Just like a high-end Euro car, an Audi, when you buy it initially, it's very expensive. Mm-hmm. And then it takes a big hit. You know what I mean? And so a lot of Audi enthusiasts, you want to buy that car when it's like 4 years old, right? Because it's taken a lot of times like a 50% hit. But there's still a lot of life in it. But all my Audi friends need to get rid of their cars around that 90 to 100,000 mile. And a lot of times they'll buy the same car. Like, I got a buddy that was saying, man, I need to get rid of my Audi. I was like, I thought you loved that thing. He goes, I do, but it's about to hit 100,000 miles. I need to get rid of it because I don't want to be holding that hot potato, you know, like when it goes bad. And I was like, so what are you going to get? He's like, the same car, just with 60,000 miles. He's like, that's what I do. I buy them with 50 or 60,000 miles. I run them to 100 and I get the hell rid of them, because he's also got like an older Porsche 996. He's like, I mean, if the Audi breaks, I got to sell the Porsche to fix the Audi. Like, you know, and that's the way of the EV. Now, yes, the future may change all these things, but here's how it's going. We can assume that a shelf life is going to be 9 to 15 years right now. Mm-hmm. You buy the car high, but, you know, when I say high, like, let's say it's a $70,000 EV or something, but then you get a few years out of it, already the second owner, after about 4 years, is going, well, I mean, how much is it worth? Because I might only get 5 years out of it. Mm-hmm. And it's not like an internal combustion car where you're like, I might get 5 years out of it and it needs a transmission and that could cost me $2,000. No, $20,000. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like a Honda where you go, well, hell, if the motor craps out, okay, swap it and make it even better. You're going to spend $20,000 to make it the same. You know what I mean? Like, so by the second or third owner, man, like, is there a third owner? Who's going to buy these things?
And that's whenever you guys hear us saying it's not green, you got to understand, this is another thing that we as car guys take into account. If these cars are not staying on the road for 20, 30 years, and we're just taking all that battery tech and all those rare materials and we're just shoving it into a giant dump somewhere, that was not efficient. That was a waste. It's not green.
You're not making the most out of what you're making. These 90s Toyota Corollas and Camrys and Accords and stuff like that that are out there still running, that has been an amazing, you know, creation. It's still out there. They got to figure out the battery recycling, which I know they're working on, because then it turns into a game of get the car back, screw the body. It's the battery that we need to recycle so that we can make the next one. We'll just melt down, you know, the body. It kind of kills car culture in a lot of ways, because, again, it turns this into the cell phone model. Just turn it back in and get another one. Who the hell cares? There's no passion around the car anymore.
Yeah.
Let me see. I'm trying to see if there's anything else. Are we talking about how it affects the value? I don't know. It's just one of those things, like, We're going to watch this. Like, starting now, EVs are 10 years old, roughly. Like, we're hitting that decade. So the early EVs, the early tech is 10 years old. We're going to watch this play out. Just today, actually, I was talking to my daughter's teacher last year, because she has a Leaf, and she's always very apologetic. Well, she's like, I know you don't like them, but at the time they had so many incentives that it was basically free, and it would be crazy not to do it, and blah, 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 blah. You know, and I was like, no, that's cool, that's cool. I was like, so you've had it a while. Like, how's your ownership experience been? And she was, I was like, what kind of range are you getting now? Now that it's, I think it's like, I don't know, 6 years old. She was like, so when I first got, and this is a Nissan Leaf, so it was never like a super strong EV. When I first got it, she was getting 120 miles out of it. She's like, that's fine because I drive to school and back, right? Like, it works for my daily life. And if we need to go somewhere, her husband has a Tacoma. So she was like, it's fine. She's like, but now after 6 years, I'm getting like 70 miles. So that's another thing to look at these values. Your car just slowly wheezes out. You know what I mean? It's not like an internal combustion where you're like, oh, that broke, I need to fix. You know what I mean? Like, an internal combustion car still makes good power years and years and years and years down the road. So you're in a situation where the batteries are not bad. You don't need that replacement, but you're only getting about half of what you were getting. And yep, you're going to live like that for years. And the car is not going to be valuable like that because you know it's coming. And that's another thing that I wonder. I always think about this stuff. Are we going to be 15 years in the future from now? Are you going to pull into a charger to charge your EV and they're going to be hogged by a bunch of damn EV jalopies that need new batteries, but the owners cannot afford them? Yep. You know what I mean? Because people are going to, these cars are going to depreciate in value. People are going to buy them, especially if the government keeps trying to force it and force out internal combustion. And they're only going to get 70 miles of range, 50 miles of range. They're going to be having to stop all the time to charge. They're going to be taking up the chargers. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a great situation there.
You have a situation where those things are going to have to charge when they get to work and then also, again, when they get home. Just
constantly. You have to charge everywhere.
Yeah, it's going to be a cell phone. Like, everybody's got that buddy who has an old cell phone, and everywhere you go, he's like, hey, man, you got a charger I can borrow? And it's like, no, get a new phone, Brent.
Your buddy's going to come over to your house and be like, hey, bro, man, can I get that charger? And be like, son of a bitch, I'm trying to charge my car. You know, but hey, in the Leaf's defense, she did tell me, I need to add this, she took it in, and they're going to give her a battery for this six-year-old car. Because, you know, a lot of times, because of that fear of what if the battery dies, you know, these people, the EVs, they offer a lot of warranty. So she's still under it. And they said, we will replace it. Of course, then the next sentence is, but due to supply chain issues, you know, like, be patient. She's like, will it ever happen? I don't know. She's like, I can tell you that before it does happen, I'm going to go out of warranty. You know, it's one of those situations where she went in as it was approaching warranty. Yeah. So,
well,
I wonder, does Nissan have a bunch of, you know, when Nissan was making the Leaf, they didn't have a lot of, the old Leaf, they didn't have a lot of competition. And so now they're like, yeah, we'll replace that. Holy shit, batteries have gotten expensive. You know, I'm like, we can't get the supplies. We can't get the resources because now everybody's competing for this stuff. So, yeah, I don't know, man.
I'm glad that they're going to take care of it for her, because if they hadn't, she would be stuck in a really bad situation. She would be stuck with that car, because how do you sell that? You know,
you can't.
Yeah, you can't. Who the hell is going to buy Nissan that only gets 7 miles of range and is 6 years old?
But that Nissan Leaf is at that price point that we were saying they need to figure out how to hit, because her thing was, at the time, there was like a big $10,000 incentive or whatever. And she was like, I mean, with that tax break or whatever it was, plus with what they were saving in gas, she said it was free. So her mentality is, if they didn't fix it, you sell it for whatever you can get, you know, and who cares? Because you've already won, so to speak. She was like, but if they do replace it, I essentially have another car for 5 years, you know, like a brand new car, the way that she sees it. She's like, I don't like it, but, you know, she's like, it's ugly. I call it Big Booty Judy, but like, it's just, you know, it gets her to working back, and that's what it's for. But they also have the Tacoma, old reliable, you know, that's his, the husband's car that they drive around if she exceeds her, you know, little range for the day.
Yeah.
Makes so speaking of Tacomas, hey, that was a good transition. The new Tacoma has been released. I don't know how much you paid attention to this. I assume everybody in the world knows, but probably not. The new Tacoma is coming out 2024. In my opinion, it's an absolute home run. The basics, I think it's a 2.4 liter turbo. So four-cylinder turbo, four-wheel drive, obviously. They're also keeping the option for a manual transmission, a six-speed. So here we are in 2023, and we can buy a mid-sized little rowdy truck with a four-cylinder turbo, 4x4, six-speed.
Hell yeah.
Say no more. Now, of course, because the way the world is now, they jazzed it up. You know, they make the TRD Pro, which was badass on the last gen, the current gen. Everybody loves it. It's badass on this gen. It looks amazing. Of course, they go to 11 and 12. They've got seats that are an option with suspension in the back of the seats. So when you're barreling down the deserts, you're not bouncing around. They've also introduced a Trail Hunter, which is going to be like a TRD Pro, like a higher end specialty model, but more towards the Overlander. you know, whatever. The TRD Pro is supposed to be kind of your blaster, your speed, performance, Trail Hunter, camping, adventuring, you know, stuff like that, roaming around. So, I mean, that's pretty much that. I mean, it's gonna slay. Tacomas are awesome. Everybody loves them. They've done a perfect job making it evolve. And you know who did it? That Calte. The guys that we met at Hilton Head, they designed for Lexus and Toyota. Like, we met one of their designers, and he, like, drew on a napkin for us. It was awesome. But those guys are awesome.
Yeah.
I think they did the new Tundra. They've been doing a bunch of the 86, I believe. Don't quote me on that. They've been doing a lot of the Toyota Lexus stuff.
He did this, the new Supra.
Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of came
up. Hell yeah.
Speaking of Toyota, we got another GR86 with a popped motor again. Can I just say, Jesus Christ, Toyota, for as much good press as we give you guys, I got to kind of give you the business here for a second. Stop partnering with Subaru, the most unreliable motor manufacturers in the world, to make your fun cars. That's the dumbest thing you could have possibly done. Put a cool, fun Toyota motor in there and be done. This is such a simple thing, but you screwed it up by partnering with Subaru. I don't understand it. Stop doing stupid things like that. You stop it.
Yeah, I think it's time that Toyota thinks about putting a Toyota motor in the Toyota GR86. I don't think that Subaru is bringing a lot to the team here. You know, Toyota does the chassis and all that. The only thing is the
warranty. Warranty claims.
Yeah, the car's kind of designed around that boxer motor. In theory, the boxer it's got its advantages. It's a flat motor. It gets the center of gravity low. It allows, you know, the front end of the 86 to have that kind of low hood. but now Toyota's got that three-cylinder in the GR Corolla. So, and I know that they were toying with that, you know, not for production, but they've been toying with it. That seems like the answer here. Describe the story here. There's a guy doing a track day at Palmer Motorsports Park, which is kind of, I think it's like a private country club type of motorsports park in Massachusetts. And he's got it on video. He had a camera running when the motor popped. And again, we don't know what, you know, Well, I mean, we're just Monday morning quarterback in here. We don't know what really happened. Like, for all we know, he forgot to put oil in it. For all we know, the drain plug came out. For all we know, who knows? You know what I mean? A million different things could go wrong. But we do know that the 8.6 engine has a problem with oil starvation because Subaru over silicones or over seals an oil pickup line. So imagine a circle, which I am making with my hand right now, and oil flows through that. Oil flows through that. Well, when you stick a bunch of silicone in it, it starts to look like this, right? Like it's half blocked. So the oil might still make it through in normal street driving. It's not a problem. But if you get in a situation where you're throwing the car around a little bit, you can starve it for oil. Kind of like our little buddy back in the day with his 8.6. Remember the guy that was your driving instructor in the Type R? Yeah.
That guy's cool.
So anyway, this is not necessarily, motors have been popping. They've been making their rounds on the internet and everything. We don't know what happened. That is information that the dealers have and that Toyota has. You know what I mean? But they did deny the claim. And there is a known issue here. And the video shows moderate driving, and it seems to be good judgment. You know, the only thing in question that I see is, like, after the sound started, he kind of kept driving it, which I'm sure didn't help. But he said, with the helmet and with other cars, he was like, man, I thought it was like a piece of the inner fender or something hitting, you know? So he was kind of like, I'll get back to the pits. Well, that didn't happen. You know, it got worse. The car was unmodified. The engine was unmodified. And the car had 19,000 miles on it. Shouldn't be happening. This was not a track car. I mean, this is a full interior, not cage car. He's in street clothes with a helmet on. You know what I mean? This is a track day. This is a recreational thing. And they weren't. I'm not trying to knock on the guy. He's not blitzing around the track. This is like somebody that bought an 8.6 and wanted to go do a track day. Oh, and by the way, Toyota gives you a track day with NASA when you buy any GR product. So it's not like they market this to be exactly it. He's not doing anything that they said it can't do.
Yeah.
So me being that Monday morning quarterback, seems like the wrong call, man. Seems like you need to take care of your engines, and then seems like you need to go talk to the Subaru boys. Because this is getting to be a problem. And we love everything that Toyota is doing right now for people that love cars. So I'm not trying to bash them. As a matter of fact, it's all the more reason why, they need to make this right. You know what I mean? Because I don't want something like this to start tarnishing great cars and a great lineup of cars that Toyota has right now. People buy Toyota because they're damn solid. You know, like, people don't buy Subarus because they're not solid. So when you stick a Subaru motor into a Toyota, I mean, you know, let Subaru do the dog loving station wagon thing and then let Toyota, I don't want the GR brand to be tarnished. They got so much momentum right now.
Yep. 100% agree. Get away from it, guys.
Please. All right. Well, I mean, that kind of covers at least the articles I've been kind of messing with and writing about. Unless you got anything else you want to randomly talk about.
No, man, we're good. I'm looking at time right now. We're a little under 50 minutes. So
holy crap.
We went a while. It was a long session.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess, I don't know, man. In closing, if you guys don't already have our app, it's free. And all these articles are on there. There's also the video of the 8.6 and all that kind of stuff is on there. It's called S3 Magazine. It's available on Apple and Android. You know, if you like kind of our mindset on things, not saying you have to agree with everything, but if you like the general mindset, check out the store on our website and, I don't know, pick you up a shirt or a hat or whatever, and support. We appreciate it. And I guess that's about it, right?
That's it, guys. Have a good night.